Thank you, Dr. McKay. So I'm going to start off here with a little bit of a kind of an introduction on why I'm studying these two species. So the first is Lucilia sericata. It's a calophorid, and it's both medically and veterinarily important. It's medically important because it's been implicated in being a transmitter of various pathogens that can cause disease in humans. And then it's also veterinarily important because it's a known producer of meiosis in a number of animals, but most notably sheep. So it's a big problem in New Zealand and Australia and Great Britain and other places that raise a lot of sheep. But it's also been found causing meiosis in box turtles and a few other wildlife animals within North America. And then it's also forensically important. So the Lucilia flies arrive very early on carrion, which makes them very useful in estimating the minimum period of insect activity. So Nesonia vitropinnis is a pupal parasitoid of Cyclorhaphendiptera, and it's a biological control agent of many of these flies, so it's been mass reared and released in a lot of locations worldwide to control blowfly populations such as Lucilia sericata that are problems with livestock and other things. And then recently its forensic importance has also been realized because it is a pupal parasitoid of these flies that are developing on carrion. It can also be used to determine a kind of an extended minimum period of insect activity on carrion. So there are two objectives of my study. The first is to determine how soil compaction affects the burrowing depth of Lucilia sericata larvae that are searching for a pupation site. And I'm hypothesizing that the burrowing depth of Lucilia sericata larvae decreases as the degree of soil compaction increases. And then my second objective is to determine how burrowing depth of Lucilia sericata larvae affects the ability of Nesonia vitropinnis to parasitize puparia. So I'm hypothesizing that parasitism is going to decrease as burrowing depth of the host increases. So as the host goes deeper, the parasitoid is going to have a more difficult time locating the host, which is going to decrease the parasitism rate. So the reason I'm performing this study, both of these species are cosmopolitan. So the data generated from this study has a very wide stretch because it can be applied pretty much worldwide. I mean, I guess except for Antarctica, where neither of these species are. And the Lucilia sericata larvae, they typically burrow into soil to pupate. They won't burrow when there's not soil present, but generally they do burrow. And parasitoids are commonly reared from field-collected puparia. So this interaction between many species of parasitoids and flies that are found on carrion is very common. But this host parasitoid system is pretty poorly studied. The only study that has looked at pupation behavior of blowflies with respect to parasitism by Nesonia vitropinnis was done in 1950, and there were no parasitoids used in that study. They only used the blowflies, and they allowed them to burrow into sand that was about, I think, probably about 5 inches deep, and there were no parasitoids. But the title of that paper is the burrowing behavior of blowflies with respect to parasitism by Nesonia vitropinnis, but no parasitoids, so there's really no information that can be gotten from that as far as parasitism is concerned. And then the accurate analysis of entomological evidence in a forensic context depends upon locating the oldest insects which developed on the carrion. And so it's likely in an advanced stage of decomposition that those oldest insects are going to be the pupal stages of blowflies that are going to be found in the soil, and then it's very likely that they're going to be parasitized because these parasitoids are pretty common. So both of my species are reared at approximately 25.5 degrees Celsius, 60% humidity, and on a light dark regime of 16 hours of light and 8 hours of dark, and they're reared in separate rearing chambers to prevent contamination. So my soil was collected on the Clemson University campus in one of the organic gardens and then sieved. And so here, going from left to right, you see the size of the soil from when I collected it. It's pretty large clumps, and then I break it up into the smaller clumps that you see in the middle container, and then it's run through a 4-millimeter screen to give me kind of a nice mixture of really fine particles and then particles that are small enough to fit through the 4-millimeter screen. And then after I get it to that small size, the soil is air dried to 0% moisture and then rehydrated with distilled water to 25% by weight. I then place the soil into the containers. I have two different treatments there. So there's an uncompacted soil, which is just loosely poured in, so it comes out to approximately 0.0156 kilograms per centimeter squared. And then I have a compacted trial where I used various tamps to compact the soil into those containers to 4.4 kilograms per centimeter squared. And then I have four treatments with 10 containers in each treatment. There's uncompacted, uncompacted plus parasitoids, compacted, and compacted plus parasitoids. And throughout the rest of the talk, they will be referred to in the text as with those abbreviations there. So in the uncompacted and compacted trials, I placed five post-feeding larvae on top of the soil and allowed them to burrow. And then in the uncompacted plus parasitoids and compacted plus parasitoids, I place five post-feeding larvae on top of the soil and then immediately place five adult female Nasonia into the container with them, and then close it up and let the larvae burrow and pupate. And then after the adult flies emerge and the adult wasps emerge, then I locate the pupary in the soil and then record the depth at which they pupated. So as this graph shows here, there is a big difference with respect to the soil compaction. In the uncompacted trial, the larvae burrow to about 5.6 centimeters. The uncompacted plus parasitoids, 5.7 centimeters. The compacted, 0.99 centimeters, and the compacted plus parasitoids, a little over 1 centimeter. And the significant difference is signified by those letters, and it's based on a Kruskal-Wallis test and a pairwise Mann-Whitney. So as you can see, there is a large difference between uncompacted and compacted soil. So the development of these flies from egg to adult takes approximately 13.5 to 14.5 days. And about 10 of these days is in the experiment. So and about 70% of that entire time is in the pupal stage. So it's very important that this system gets studied, because as you can see, over half of the life of these flies is spent in this stage that I'm studying. And then after the flies emerged, I got 96% emergence of the adult Lucilia sericata. So at first that seems like, you know, I might have something good there. There might be parasitism, but then wasps never emerged, so I had 0% parasitism. There were four flies that did not emerge. One of them failed to pupate, and the other three pupated but did not emerge. So that's getting counted as unsuccessful parasitism. So in conclusion, the burrowing depth of Lucilia sericata does decrease as the degree of soil compaction increases. And then the soil affects the parasitism of Lucilia sericata puparia by Nasonia vitropinnis in some way. I don't know how, but it's raising questions that I'm hoping to answer, and those questions are, why is it affecting it? I have a few hypotheses why. The first, the soil could be too hot for the Nasonia. Soil has a very high specific heat compared to air, so the soil could, even though it's maintained at a constant temperature within the rearing chambers, the soil could be a lot warmer than the ambient air temperature. And Nasonia are psychrophilic, so the soil could just be too hot for them. Or the soil could be masking volatiles that they're using to locate the host. I don't know. I'm hoping to have more data on that soon. Right now I have another experiment currently running, so I guess when I get back to Clemson at the end of the week, I will have some more data. With that, I would like to thank the members of the Biomia Lab, so Eddie Beard, Mark Nelder, Dustin Swanson, Holly Tootin, and Bill Wills for their help in this project. Jeff Wells for providing the flies that I used to start my colony. Jim Woolley for identifying the parasitoids that I started that colony with. Julia Sharp for help with the statistical analyses. And the Department of Entomology for awarding me the Nettles Endowed Memorial Grant and Nettles Entomology Student Travel Fund. And then the Clemson University Graduate Student Government Professional Enrichment Grants, which helped fund my trip. Thank you. Yes.
Yeah. What was the source of your Nasonia?
I collected them from, I field collected puparia actually from a study I did about a year ago. I was just collecting insects off of some carrion, and collected some puparia and brought them into the lab and isolated them, and a large number of Nasonia emerged from a number of those pupae. Yes.
Did you dissect those pupae?
I did not.
We have time for some questions.
quickly do you think, is there any literature information how quickly the wasps can actually find the jumping?
I don't know if there's literature on how quickly they find them, because as far as I know, nobody really knows how they locate the host. Presumably they're queuing in, like in a natural setting, they're presumably queuing in on some volatiles from the carrion, and then there has to be some other cue that they're using to actually locate the host. But time-wise, they won't parasitize until the hosts are 24 hours old, and then they will not parasitize after the hosts have kind of formed. So I think when the eyes actually form, they won't parasitize past that point. So there's about a 3-day window there where they can parasitize, but how they locate them, I don't know. Yes?
Do you know approximately what the natural percentage is of the parasitized pupa?
I don't. I think it kind of varies. Sometimes when I collect puparia, I get a large number of parasitoids of all different species. Some of them are pupal parasitoids, others are larval pupal parasitoids, and then sometimes there aren't very many at all. But from what I've seen in past studies where people have collected field-collected puparia, that parasitism is quite frequent, but percentage-wise, I'm unsure.
Thank you.
Thanks.